left me feeling sick and worried and seriously off balance. She hadn't banished me, but I wasn't sure whether that was a good sign or not. She might be testing these new waters, making sure that the mental tie we had wouldn't drag her off along with me. Or maybe she didn't intend to do anything at all. It wasn't like she needed to risk it. As she had demonstrated twice now, she could emerge whenever she chose and wrestle control away from me, because she'd always been stronger. And that was with the wall still partially up. What would happen when the last pieces fell? What would happen when she could trap me in the same hell that she'd been forced to endure, or banish me entirely? I turned the phone back on and punched in a different number, because if I couldn't talk to Dorina, I needed to talk to someone who knew her, and better than Mircha seemed to. Hello?
Hello. I'd like to speak to Horatiu, please.
And who may I say is calling?
I sighed, because this never went well. Mircha's masters were better than most, better than the ones at the Senate, who usually hissed at me unless Daddy was around, but it was a matter of degree. Mircha's masters looked like they wanted to hiss, but were manfully holding back because they had better breeding than that. Unlike me.
Dory, I snapped, because didn't he have caller ID? And I don't want a problem, okay? I just want to talk.
Lady Dorina, is that you?
I paused and looked at the phone, not because of the words, which could have been sarcasm, but because of the tone. The guy, whoever it was, had sounded delighted.
Yeah? How wonderful to hear from you.
I stared at the phone some more. I resisted an impulse to shake it, and then I did it anyway because happy little burbling noises were coming out of it and freaking me out.
Can I speak to Horatiu?
I finally cut in. The burbling stopped, and was replaced by a gushing, apologetic vamp explaining to me what I should have already known, because Horatiu wasn't a master. He was barely even a vampire, since Mircha hadn't gotten around to changing the old man until he was on his deathbed, and those sorts often don't take properly, leaving the family with a doddering, mostly deaf, and almost completely blind vampire, who, because of Mircha's huge fondness for him, could do whatever the hell he wanted, including sleep in.
"What time does he usually get up?"
I almost yelled, to be heard over the effusions of joy that speaking to me had apparently brought to this vamp's life. There were a lot of them.
"Thank you!" I finally yelled. "Tell him I'll be by later."
And then I hung up and just sat there staring at the phone some more. What the hell? Chapter 29. I was sucking on a splinter, my only relic from the fight, when I entered the kitchen, and found it deserted except for a harassed-looking Fay at the sink, and Gessa sitting on a stool alongside. She looked the same as always, in a cute blue sack dress, because nothing rattled her, including, apparently, teaching a Fay how to do the dishes. He looked up when I came in, relief flooding his face. Either he was out of the loop, or he didn't care about my supposed shaman status. All he knew was that a woman had finally showed up to do the chores and the world had righted itself. He started to take off his apron, and I held up my hand. "Sorry, Splinter." The weight of the universe came crashing back onto his shoulders, and Gessa had to turn away to hide a smile.
"You okay?"
I asked her. She nodded.
"And Imsi?"
She sighed.
"In his room. He's sad."
"Yeah, I'd been afraid of that."
I added coffee to the perpetual grocery list on the fridge and wolfed down a giant container of soup, a salad, 3 boiled eggs, most of a jar of pickles,
and some soft cheese spread on half a loaf of fresh baked bread. Then I headed for the basement. Or I tried to. But young trolls make human teens look like neat freaks, and there was so much stuff piled against the basement door that I could barely get the old thing there. It finally allowed me a couple inches to squeeze through, so I did, and abruptly stopped, because I couldn't see a damned thing. That would have been bad enough on its own, without the minefield of items between me and the bottom of the stairs. But Claire's Uncle Pip had never bothered to run lights down here, and I didn't feel like taking time to hunt for a flashlight. I slowly started to pick my way down. Trolls are nocturnal, more often than not, back in Faerie. Not out of choice, but because their eyes don't help them much, even in daylight, leaving them at a serious disadvantage among better-sighted creatures. But at night, their superior hearing and smell put the shoe on the other foot, allowing them to hunt in pure darkness. It was why a lot of them lived in caves. Even a well-equipped contingent of light fae hesitated at the idea of descending into a dark-as-pitch subterranean maze filled with creatures that didn't need to see you in order to kill you. And over time, it had just become a thing. Caves might be cold and hard and generally unappealing, until you factored in the advantage of sleeping in safety. And suddenly, they didn't seem so bad. Which, I guess, was why the twins had chosen to live in the basement, despite being offered the guest room upstairs. And why only one of them had adjusted to living in sunlight. That, of course, was Eamsy, because gardening was easier during the day. But Sven was still mostly a night owl, and had taken to prowling around the neighborhood after dark, dragging back any rubbish that caught his eye. He just couldn't get over all the stuff that people threw away here. Cracked bird baths and old furniture, and random 2x4s, and a twisted bike with no back wheel, and a painting of triangles, and a rusted fridge, and a whole box of CDs. Trolls are not fond of hip-hop, as it turns out, but still, so shiny. Claire had drawn the line at bags of actual trash, like she'd had to break Gessa from washing used paper towels and setting them all over the counters to dry. The dark fae lived on lousy land in Faerie, since most of the better stuff had been taken from them in the wars. I'd kind of gotten the impression that everything was hard to come by, from food to possessions, so nothing was wasted. Trash just wasn't a thing among the dark fae. So garbage day was an endless bazaar of wonders to Sven, because many of the old people put their cans out the night before, leaving him on an all-night shopping trip where everything was free, and leaving our garbage guys an easier job the next day, because a lot of the discarded junk of the neighborhood ended up back here. That was especially true of anything metal and shiny that whirred softly when poked, because, unlike his brother, Sven preferred all things mechanical, and had rescued a profusion of broken electronics to tinker with. He'd managed to get an old blender working again, which had delighted him to no end, and had thereafter started a side business with other dark fae, trading things he'd found or repaired for things he wanted. The problem was that Sven had a problem telling trash from treasure, and had begun to demonstrate some serious pack-rat tendencies. They hadn't progressed all the way to hoarding, but they were heading that way fast. And Claire didn't play that. If he didn't do something soon, she was going to make good on her threat to open up the portal and just blow everything to kingdom come. Which might be the only option at this point, I thought, jumping over the railing for the last 5 feet, because it was easier. My eyes had had time to adjust, allowing me to see a dim lantern glowing in the gloom, and Sven over by the far wall, holding something. It turned out to be a troll favorite, consisting of potatoes sliced up in a bowl, covered with milk and a cloth,
and sat in a corner of the basement until it turned into something horrid. It was the Earth version of a traditional troll delicacy, and the boys loved it. But it took a long time to make, because apparently it wasn't good until it was really rancid, and they guarded their portions jealously. Which was why it was weird that he wasn't eating it. He was just holding it, sitting on the floor, beside a blanket-covered lump that I assumed was his brother. He looked at me, and then he held out the bowl in both hands because it wasn't actually a bowl. It was a kitchen sink one of the neighbors had thrown out, and that he had found and bunged up and used for things like eating 3 boxes of cereal for breakfast, or a whole lot of rancid potatoes.
"He don't eat,"
Sven said, looking worried, because this was not a normal thing among trolls. "Just leave it there," I told him, and he nodded and put the sink down. Sven levered himself up, and despite his size, managed to negotiate the minefield on the stairs better than me. It reminded me of the big guy at the fights, so graceful, despite his size. I stared after him for a moment, with something rattling around my brain, something that felt important. But then it went away, and I sat down by the lump. It was a little ripe in here, smelling like a combo of swamp gas and troll ass, and making me curse Domfeer noses. But there was no point trying to hurry this. Trolls did not hurry. They considered it undignified, unless it was children gambling around or in battle. Otherwise, they had an odd sort of gravitas about them, a natural poise you wouldn't expect, or at least I hadn't, until Olga taught me that grace transcended species. I waited. It was peaceful down here, if you ignored the smell, and dim even with a lantern. There were some narrow windows up near the ceiling, but they'd recently been covered with black paint. I dragged the lantern closer, and Eamsi turned over, the light glimmering in his tiny eyes. "Did I disturb you?" I asked, wondering if I should put it back. He shook his head. We sat there some more. Despite appearances, trolls could be very restful people to be around, unlike the light fae, who reminded me of jagged bolts of lightning or hyped-up teenagers, always ready for a fight or an adventure. Trolls had a natural peacefulness about them, like the mountains and trees and deep, quiet fjords they were named after. They didn't seem to need to prove something to the world to justify their existence. They could just be. I leaned back against the basement wall and slowly felt the anger, confusion, and worry still knotting my gut start to ease away. Cool darkness wrapped around me. A gentle sort of fuzziness pervaded my body, and my feverish thoughts slowed down, down, down. I took a deep breath and let it out, suddenly feeling calmer. It was nice. A large finger emerged from the blankets and pushed the heavy vat of potatoes and slime my way.
"Thanks, but I just ate," I said.
Eamsi frowned, probably not seeing what that had to do with anything. "We humans have tiny little stomachs." I pulled up my sweatshirt and showed him. He regarded it sadly.
"And mine's full. Otherwise, I'd be all over that," I said, which seemed to mollify him somewhat. "You should eat, though," I told him.
He shook his head. I noticed that his eyes glimmered a little more than usual, although maybe that was a trick of the light. "Sure, Dory, and the light is dribbling down his face, too."
God damn, I wished we'd caught whatever attacked him. I wanted to do evil things, but that required finding it first. "I know this is a bad time," I said, "but I have some questions. Can you answer some questions?"
Eamsy blinked at me, looking surprised. Like he'd expected the usual, "It's not your fault, you shouldn't blame yourself," stuff he'd probably heard a dozen times by now. Which was true, but not helpful, because of course he blamed himself. He had stabbed a kid. And the fact that he hadn't wanted to, and that the kid might pull through anyway, wasn't really the point, was it? "I'm going to find whatever was here last night, and I'm going to kill it," I told him. "But it would be easier if I had some more info to go on. If you remember anything?" Eamsy regarded me silently for a moment. I looked placidly back. Troll brains took their time, but that didn't mean they were stupid. Eamsy, for example, could tell you everything about every flower in the garden, which needed sun and which did better in shade, which made the prettiest flower and which smelled the best, which responded to what kind of fertilizer or needed what kind of soil, acidic or sweet. The guy was a walking compendium of knowledge about his favorite subject, like a human kid knowing all the stats on his favorite sports team, even though he had just failed algebra. People are smart when they want to be, and I thought maybe Eamsy wanted to be right now.
"Woman,"
he finally said in a low rumble. "It was a woman who attacked you?" Again, I got a surprised look, although this time I wasn't sure why. Until he told me.
"Not attack. I attack. I kill."
He broke off. I blinked. Maybe no one had talked to him about this after all. "You didn't kill anyone," I said. "He's upstairs resting. Didn't they tell you?" He nodded and then shook his head violently.
"I try kill. Same thing."
"I don't think the kid would think it's the same thing."
"She says stab. I stab. I can't stop."
He broke off again and for a moment sat very still.
"I try,"
he finally said.
"I run into things. I break. But no one here."
Probably due to all the screaming. "That's why you were covered in blood," I said. "Because the stab wound in the kid wouldn't have caused that. The blade might have gotten a little messy, but Eamsy should have been fine. Except that he'd made himself deliberately bloody, not an easy thing for trolls, so that someone would notice. And if everybody in the house hadn't been in basically the same shape, maybe they would have." "That was brave," I told him, and got another look, almost angry this time.
"Not brave. I kill."
He threw off the blanket, looking like he wanted to get up and punch something. I knew the feeling. "Well, I think you're brave," I said. "You tried to fight off an attack all by yourself with no one to help you. And when you couldn't, you did the next best thing. You stabbed the wrong side of the chest, because you knew what this woman didn't, that troll hearts are on the other side." Eamsy made a sound, and not a nice one. It didn't seem like he agreed with me. I sighed and looked up at the ceiling, which had some old explosion patterns on it, from Pip Still. The boys had apparently halted production of their brew for the moment, because the hulking thing in the corner was silent, just gleaming a little in reflected light, and showing me a dark glimpse of the tortured face that Eamsy was hiding from me. There was another long pause.
"Light, Fay,"
he finally said, his voice harsh.
"Heart same side as human."
So if it was a light Fay woman, one who didn't know much about trolls, she might think you had done the job? He nodded. Sounded like a Freitas to me, but that made even less sense now than yesterday, and it hadn't made much then. Efreetus, of all people, knew that Aiden was protected. She had been the one to steal the rune in the first place, She had to know he was wearing it, so stabbing him would do exactly fuck all. But if the troll kid had been the target, then it really didn't seem like her. Based on what Dorina had heard in that underwater room, it sounded like Geminis' family were back in the smuggling business, assuming that they had ever stopped. Geminis had been running weapons, and very dangerous ones. There was serious money in that, particularly in the middle of a war. It would make sense for some of his guys to risk continuing it. And to kill a troll kid who knew too much. What didn't make sense was for Efreetus to be involved. Claire might hate her, and with cause, but the fact remained that she'd come to warn us when she didn't have to. She had helped save our asses just a couple weeks ago. Why would she be helping the other side now? And it wasn't like there weren't other suspects. Eastland, for instance, Efreetus' estranged husband. He was a leader on the other side of the war who had worked with Geminis in the past. He had every reason to put arms in the hands of his partisans here, and to sow as much discord as possible. Plus, Earth was his element. He could easily raise a Manlican force out of it. And he controlled a whole Fey kingdom. He could probably also scrape up a Vargr, if he thought he needed one. Like, to frame his faithless wife for a crime he had committed? And finally, there was the fact that Olga had slept a little too soundly the night that the troll boy was attacked. She had put it down to being up for something like a day and a half, but I wasn't sure. Food and drink are always offered to visitors by trolls. It's seen as a major insult not to. So, despite arguing with Gerard, a.k.a. White Hair, and Trim, better known as Gravel Face, she had followed precedent. After they left, she'd been so sleepy that she could barely keep her eyes open, so she went to bed. And slept like the dead. Which she might well have been, except that Stinky had stolen her half-finished beer. Fortunately, Duergars are immune to drugs and poisons, which was a good thing. Otherwise, he'd have been dead years ago from all the crap he eats. Seriously, Stinky will never starve. So somebody might have tried to knock out or poison Olga, who had brought in the troll kid, and then an attack came that very night that ended with that same kid getting stabbed. Seemed like they might be connected. Especially since she'd said that the two leaders hadn't been keen on coming here. They'd wanted to take the boy to a troll healer, halfway across town, and Olga had made them divert, because she hadn't thought the boy would survive the trip. Maybe they hadn't either. Eamsi was looking at me over his shoulder, like he was wondering what I was thinking. Or maybe he wanted some comfort, Dory. I was bad at that, but Eamsi was a good kid, one of the most genuinely sweet people I knew. He hadn't deserved any of this. "You couldn't have done any better," I told him. "Cademan and I tried together, and we couldn't stop her." And okay, that finally got a reaction. Eamsi blinked.
"You fight?"
"Yes, we both did. But she got away. She was powerful, Eamsi, but you tricked her. You tricked her, and you won." I got up. "You ought to remember that." Eamsi just looked at me, blinking slowly, like he was trying to process that. But when I looked down from the stairs on my way out, the sink was in his lap, and he was eating. Chapter 30. My thoughts were still on the puzzle from last night when I reached the hall and found it full of vampires. That would have been bad, but not surprising, since Ray had come with accessories. Only these accessories were naked. They were standing in a line from the dining room to the downstairs bathroom, leaving the what-the-hell stretching almost the entire length of the house. Some had towels wrapped around their waists or draped around their necks,
Others sported embellishments in the form of flip-flops, shower caps, or bath brushes, and a few even carried baskets of toiletries. But there were also plenty of different colored buns in view, along with sunken chests, man boobs, and hairy shanks. And then it got worse.
Dory?
Claire's voice came from somewhere upstairs.
Is that you?
I looked up, and I swear my heart stopped. Holy shit. I grabbed Ray, who for some reason was completely filthy, and shook him.
What?
He asked.
Dory!
I swallowed.
Yeah?
Hi, Claire.
Hi, yourself.
The voice floated down from the direction of my room.
I'm just going to change your sheets, okay?
Sure,
I squeaked.
Thanks.
Do you need any towels?
Yeah, we could use...
Ray began before I clapped a hand over his mouth.
What was that?
I said sure, if it's no trouble.
I called up.
No trouble. I have some fresh ones in the laundry room.
No!
The laundry room was downstairs.
No, I just remembered I'm fine. Tons of towels.
You're sure?
Absolutely.
I shoved Ray at the dining room door, but he didn't want to go.
What?
He pulled my hand away.
What the hell are you doing?
What are you doing? I hissed.
Get them back in the dining room.
Why? They gotta get baths.
Not now.
Then when?
After I have time to talk to Claire.
You haven't talked to Claire?
When have I had time to talk to Claire? He put dirty hands on terry cloth-covered hips.
You had time to talk to her last night. You telling me she don't know we're here?
That's what I'm telling you,
I whispered, while shoving Ray into the dining room and pushing his guys in after him.
And I'm telling you this is bullshit.
Ray ducked under my arm.
I'm gonna go
back inside, I said, and whirled him through the door again.
Cut that out.
Then stop being a dick.
I'm being a dick. You...
I slammed the door on him and casually leaned against it as Claire came down the stairs, and then noticed, about the same time she did, the small yellow object at the bottom of the steps. She bent down and picked it up.
I don't remember us having a rubber ducky.
It's mine.
I smiled brightly. Her eyebrows raised. She came the rest of the way down the stairs.
Are you waiting for something?
Dinner. Starving. You know how it is.
I saved you some soup.
Someone ate it. I smiled winningly.
So hungry.
Claire blinked at me.
I'll go make you something.
That would be great. I smiled some more. And then stopped because it appeared to be freaking her out. She disappeared into the kitchen after looking back at me once over her shoulder, and I opened the dining room door and slipped inside. I tossed Ray the damned duck.
You've got to get out of here. That's what we're trying to do. My boys need to feed.
So go.
Like that?
He gestured at the oily-haired, scruffy-jawed, smelly bunch who were currently congregated in the far corner of the room staring at me. Because, don't fear. I sighed.
They didn't eat all day yesterday,
Ray told me.
And they're not strong, like me. They can't go for days with no food, okay?
And sure enough, they had the twitchy, pasty-faced look of vamps in need of a meal. Shit. Claire was going to love the idea of a bunch of hungry vampires around her kid. Not that they were anywhere close to losing control. They weren't babies. But try telling her that. Only I didn't intend to tell her that. I hadn't talked to Claire yesterday because I'd planned to have them gone by now. They had been out of it last night, trying to heal, and might as well have been the logs they'd resembled, all rolled up in their blankets, safe from the sun. Today I'd planned to smuggle them out at first dark,
only today had mostly been spent recovering. And it wasn't like I could just rent them a cheap hotel room. A random maid opening the drapes at the wrong time could cook them to a crisp. The only hotel safe enough was the club, a super expensive vamp-owned chain for traveling masters, which I couldn't have afforded even if the local one hadn't recently burned down.
"Look," Ray began.
"Shh." I poked my head out the door and then hopped into the hall to take a quick look upstairs. The coast was clear. But knowing this place, it wouldn't stay that way. I waved at Ray and mouthed,
"Come on."
They came on, up the stairs on silent vamp feet and across to my room. Olga came out of hers in time to get flashed by the lineup, who reared back against the wall, clutching their towels and looking spooked. Guess they had been too out of it yesterday to remember her. She looked at them. They looked at her. She looked at me. And then slowly took a step back inside her room and shut the door. The vamps sprinted past, towels flying, and disappeared into mine. I stayed behind with Ray to gather up armloads of their crap and run after them. It took 3 trips, but we got it all, even the goddamn duck. I closed my door and stayed pressed against it, looking at them. There were a lot, more than I recalled. 10, 12, 15? What the hell? "You can use my bathroom," I said, "to get cleaned up. Then go out the window." I nodded at the big windows framing the bed, and when they turned to look at them, I pulled Ray back out the door.
15? I know, okay? You're too weak to support 15. Not when I was with Chung. I got a boost from him, remember? But I lost that along with my head, so...
So now you're trying to support 15 vamps on your own?
No wonder they needed to feed. Ray likely couldn't give them any help at all.
What else am I gonna do?
He demanded.
I'm responsible for them, like you're responsible for me.
I am not your master.
See, this is why we have problems. You've never fully committed to this relationship.
Ray, I'm a Madame Fear.
You're a senator. The boys are thrilled to be part of your family. Thrilled!
I opened the door again. They did not look thrilled.
Bathe,
I told them, and they jumped and then stampeded for the bathroom. I closed the door again. They can't stay here, I said. We're going to have to work something out.
I had something worked out. Then somebody just had to be a hero. Well, I hope you're happy. Curly's in the wind, his theater's trashed, and even if he does show up again...
Wait, what?
He won't want anything to do with the two of us.
Curly isn't dead?
Nobody is going to want anything to do with the two of us if what happened to Curly gets around. We're going to be known as the people you need protecting from.
What happened to Curly?
You were there.
I clapped a hand over his mouth and towed him to the stairs and then up to my office. It was in what had been the attic and was pretty well insulated, especially when I closed the trap door, and then turned around to see Ray peeling something nasty off his shoulder.
What is going on? Why do you look like that?
Oh, Ray, I'm so glad you're all right.
It was a falsetto and nothing like my voice.
I was so concerned.
I was concerned.
He looked at me.
I would have been concerned.
Sure, when you remembered I existed.
I remembered? It's been a hard few days, all right?
Tell me about it. My old master rips me off. My new master denies me. And that's after I almost end up buried alive.
What?
He nodded vigorously.
The damned portal sucked in half the street.
Half the street?
Okay, maybe not half. But 3 other buildings collapsed when it pulled the ground out from under them. There's supposed to be controls on a portal, you know? So it don't go crazy? Only something must have happened, because Curly's was set on full bore, let's swallow the world mode, and almost did.
I thought of the grenade Dorina had thrown at whatever control they'd had down there. Yeah, that would do it. Although where she'd even gotten the thing, I couldn't imagine. What kind of security guard carries grenades? Even for dark mage smugglers, that seemed a little extreme.
Looking like a sinkhole had opened up underneath it,
Ray was saying,
with the damn roof sitting curbside. It probably would have been gone altogether, but the circle showed up and shut it down. They're still pawing through the wreckage.
He paused to look around for somewhere to stash the nasty thing from his shoulder, but didn't find anything.
You got a trash can?
I shoved an ashtray at him, and he coiled whatever it was into it.
The audience got out okay,
he added,
being smart enough to run like hell. But those of us still inside when that wave hit...
He shuddered. And suddenly I did feel bad, because I had barely thought of him. Not that I didn't have about 1,000 other things to think about, but still, Ray could have died.
I could have died,
he told me, flopping down into my desk chair.
I was trying to swim out when that portal sucked the floor out from under me. I got pulled 2, maybe 3 stories down and couldn't see shit, 'cause there was water and mud and furniture and who knows what else being dragged down on top of me.
I reached over and touched his arm. That must have been terrifying.
Yeah, well.
He looked slightly mollified.
You know. Anyway, I finally found a staircase, completely full of mud, and just burrowed my way up. And stepped into freaking air again, and man, you should have seen it.
Seen what? I sat down on the visitor's chair I kept for clients, back when I had clients, and scooted it around the desk. Ray looked pleased to have an audience.
The main auditorium held together pretty well, I guess, 'cause the floors underneath were getting chomped on while it was just kind of sinking. Anyway, it looked like some big, dark, underground cave full of broken shit and puddles and waterfalls pouring down everywhere. It was crazy.
So that's when you saw Curly?
No, that's when I almost got scared to death. The circle broke a hole in the roof and sent some of their boys down on ropes, only I didn't know that, right? So there I am, freaked out, mud everywhere, including in my eyes. And there's this mist of water in the air, making everything sort of foggy. And then one of those assholes starts running at me. And he had a helmet with a searchlight on it, and looked like some kind of one-eyed monster.
He paused.
You know, a real one-eyed monster, not...
I get it.
Anyway, that's when I saw Curly.
What?
Yeah. He was with one of his boys, some young, skinny guy, and they were booking it across the other side of the theater. I called out, and I know that bastard saw me, but he just kept going. The guard shot one of those spidey webs at the hole in the roof, and they bounced.
I thought of the young guard who had been Dorina's ride. Maybe she had managed to get him out, and Curly, too? But if so, where were they now?
Beats me, Ray said when I asked. We used to call him Squirrely Curly, 'cause he runs at the first sign of trouble. He had bolt holes everywhere back in the day. That's why he wanted out of the business. He don't have the nerves for smuggling.
It looked like he was still in the game to me.
Where his precious theater was concerned, sure. Nothing was too good for that thing. Damn, if he's alive, I bet he's pissed.
Enough to rat out the people he was working with? Ray stopped.
Why?
Something Dorina overheard. He scowled.
You know it's weird when you talk about yourself in the third person, right? It creeps me out.
It doesn't do a lot for me either.
Then why not stop it?
I can't stop it.
Why not?
Because she isn't me.
creep factor intensifying.
Would you listen? She was roaming around the theater's guts while we were upstairs, and she overheard,
roaming around? She can roam around now? Like what? A ghost?
Not exactly.
When did this start?
Just recently.
I know it's just recently, or I'd know about it.
He glanced around the room, and he was looking genuinely spooked.
Is she here now?
I don't know. I don't think so.
You don't know?
He got up. I pushed him back down. Just listen.
You can't spring something like that on a guy and then say, just listen, like it's nothing. Is she gonna keep doing this?
Doing what?
Just adding more powers?
I don't know.
Well, what do you know?
That you're getting on my last nerve. We sat there glaring at each other for a moment before Ray let out a breath he didn't need.
All right. I'm listening. What?
I told him.
Okay, no.
He got up and headed for the door. I caught him halfway. Look, Ray.
No, you look. Gemina's group was straight up savage, okay? Everybody knew it. Nobody messed with them. Until he died. And the damn Senate got involved and cleaned house. They killed every one of his boys who were even suspected of smuggling.
I know that.
So if anyone decided to go right back to what just got half their family butchered, they are not the kind of guys you want to mess with.
I don't want to mess with them. I just want to know who they're working for. If they're in it for themselves, smuggling some refugees or Fey wine or whatever, then fine.
That's not what they're smuggling. That response last night. You don't get that over wine.
That's my point, Ray. If they're working with Eastland, they could be bringing in some very bad stuff for the war.
Then why not just tell the Senate? Have them deal with this.
Ray, I'm on the Senate. But if I'm going to talk them into diverting resources in the middle of a war, I need to have some evidence to offer. All I have right now is something Dorina overheard, which made it sound like first the albino, and then a mage had taken over control of Gemini's family. And you know that's impossible.
Ray shook his head. It's not impossible. In the trenches, you make alliances where you have to.
Yeah, only I don't think it works like that for senators. But we know Geminis was working with Eastland before he died, and a bunch of dark mages. So if the mage is Eastland's contact,
then the vamps wouldn't be working for a human, but for a king of the Fae.
I nodded. And their ally in the war. Ray frowned.
So you need Cully to find out if you're right.
He was working with them. He has to know something. Ray sighed.
Maybe. Or maybe he just grabbed the first offer he got after Jimenez bit the big one. People like Curly and me, we team up with mages or weirs or whoever the hell is going to help us survive.
Even a Domphir?
That's different. You and me, we got a bond.
I started to dispute him, but there was suddenly something in his face, something I'd probably worn on my own more than once. Ray looked like a guy who was bracing to get hit, with words, if not with fists, because he'd just risked something. And every time he did that, every time he trusted anybody, he paid for it. I'd spent a lifetime like that, and yet, like Ray, I always seemed to come back for more. Always seemed to hold out hope for something. I wasn't even sure what. Acceptance? A place I belonged? Some kind of certainty in an uncertain world that something had my back and would always have it? So I didn't say anything. Except to ask if something was wrong, because I'm nosy like that. Ray sat on the edge of the desk. His dark hair flopped in his face, and his blue eyes were serious. more so than I could remember seeing them.
"My boys, they're not doing so good," he told me. "When Chong cut me loose, he didn't bother to think or didn't care that he was doing it to them, too. And then the club burnt down, and most of our stuff went with it. I keep telling them that we got a new place, that you're our master now, but they don't believe it. They tell me, what's a senator want with us? They think you're gonna kick us out, and then they don't know."
He didn't finish the thought, but he didn't have to. Somebody like Ray needed a protector. He was going to have to cut a deal with someone, and soon, and he would not be negotiating from a position of strength. He and his boys were likely in for a very tough time, if they found any place at all. And if they didn't? Well, in some ways, the vamp world was like the human. It wasn't kind to those of us on our own. I didn't know how this thing between Dorina and me was going to play out, and it seemed insane to take on any more responsibilities until I did. But if the worst happened, and if Ray and company had been acknowledged by me, then somebody in the family would take care of them. They'd have to be. We Bessarabs stick together. "Yeah," I told him after a moment. Ray looked up. He'd been contemplating his navel, with a crease in his forehead, and his eyes shadowed with worry. He looked like he'd forgotten what we'd been talking about.
"Yeah, what?"
"Yeah. I guess we have a bond." Chapter 31. There was a ceremony. There's always a ceremony with vamps. Although I don't think it normally involves a bunch of guys in towels and dripping hair, some half-shaved, going down on one knee to kiss my non-existent ring. They seemed a lot happier, though, by the time I finally pushed the last squashy ass out of my bedroom window to go look for Curly, and then headed downstairs, wearing Ray's worried frown, because I now had to find lodging for 15, 16, counting him, kind of pathetic vampires, and had to do it soon. Which was why I was halfway to the porch before I looked up, and saw Luis Cesar standing just outside the door. I stopped dead. Last night there had been powder burns on one of his temples, a cut across his lower jaw, and a bruise, livid red and purple, distorting his left cheek. Tonight there was nothing. It was as if the whole thing at the theater had just been a bad dream. It shouldn't have surprised me. As soon as the curses wore off, healing would have been almost instantaneous. That's why most people never saw a first-level master like that. They healed too fast. You were never supposed to be able to trace the indentation left by a bullet, or see the scattered pieces of it shining in the moonlight through half-healed skin. You were never supposed to smell his blood, or feel terror grip your heart at the extent of the damage, because it was gone in an instant, as if it had never been there at all. But it had been there, and I had seen it. And suddenly I couldn't see anything else.
"Dory," a lilting voice called. "We were just talking about you."
Shit. I'd been so busy staring at Luis Cesar, I'd failed to notice that someone else was back, too, and lounging on the swing, his long legs splayed out in casual elegance, his green eyes amused. I didn't know why Cademan looked so pleased with himself until I noticed. Luis Cesar was holding a single rose, a beautiful thing, elegant and bright red, and tied with a little white bow, which would have been more impressive if the porch hadn't been draped with them, like, to the point that I wasn't sure it wasn't about to collapse. I didn't know where the others had come from, because they weren't the hothouse variety, but rather big, old-fashioned, pale pink things with fat, ruffled heads that shed a subtle perfume. Or they would have, if there hadn't been a million of them. Then I noticed the bloom-filled creeper coming from next door,
where it had crawled out of a neighbor's rose patch and inched along the ground the way this variety didn't, because it wasn't a climbing rose. Or at least, it hadn't been, until it scaled a tall wooden fence, dropped over the other side, scrawled across the yard, and set about making our sagging back porch sag some more with a crap ton of heavy pink blossoms, just to be nearer to the blonde in the swing. And to piss off Louis César, judging by his expression. Things were a little tense on the porch, because he and Cademan had a history, and it wasn't good. And I really didn't want a repeat, considering how much repair work the house still had to do. And then I noticed that Louis César was in a suit. It was a nice one, a dark blue that deepened his eyes to sapphire and brought out the red in his hair. He'd matched it with a pristine white shirt and a dark-colored tie, usually a boring combination, unless it draped across broad shoulders and a sculpted chest. I blinked at him, because he looked, well, like you'd expect. Edible. "Going somewhere?" I asked, and he awkwardly handed me his lone flower.
"I was hoping to take you to dinner."
I didn't say anything. Not because Olga's errand waited, or because I had already eaten, but because I hadn't expected him tonight and I wasn't ready. I knew what had to be done, had known ever since I realized that my days were likely numbered. Hell, I'd known it long before that, practically since I set eyes on Mr. Too Good for the Likes of You, but I still wasn't.
Dory?
We're already planning a feast here. My men are cooking it now, Cademan said,
coming to the rescue with a strange little smile, and with a wave of a languid hand toward the garden, which I hadn't noticed because the roses were blocking half of it. But now... Did you ask Claire about this? I breathed, my eyes widening. Ask me about what? Claire said, backing out of the house. She had a tray in her hands, piled with sandwiches, napkins, and a pitcher of homemade lemonade, which she almost dropped, along with her jaw, when she turned around.
Cademan!
She was staring at the fragrant smoke starting to waft this way from numerous campfires, campfires that had been dug willy-nilly all over her formerly nice lawn, including a huge fire pit over which a spit had been erected to hold an entire smallish cow, overlarge sheep, massive pig. The jury was still out, because I couldn't see it properly through a bunch of guards who were crowding around to rub the meat with some kind of spice paste. Others were putting pots on fires, decorating weathered old picnic tables with what looked suspiciously like Claire's best bed sheets, carting in armloads of firewood they'd gotten who knew where, and chasing off a couple of little dogs, which had been drawn by the aroma. Large lanterns were being lit in the trees, and smaller ones were being strung on ropes crisscrossing the garden. Wooden kegs were being brought out of tents, including one that splashed Sawinny in the face when he opened it wrong, and groups of fae were gathered around large pans, loudly debating sauce ingredients. Somebody brushed past Claire with a question in a language I didn't know, but which caused her to spin and yell after him,
"No! And stay out of my pantry!"
Having scared off the fae, she turned her ire on Cademan, who was still lounging in the swing, still smiling that little smile and still holding Louis César's eyes.
"Do stay for dinner," he offered,
which for some reason made Louis César flush almost as dark as his rose.
"Cademan!"
Claire's voice snapped.
"What is this?"
"A celebration. It's not often we have the chance to welcome a new cousin, especially one so skilled."
"Cousin?"
Claire looked confused. I glanced around. That was all we needed. Another fae.
"My apologies about your treatment earlier,"
Cademan said, looking past her at nothing, because there was nobody behind me.
Radar has been informed of his error. He and the others have been instructed to treat you with the respect due your new station.
Station? What station?
Claire asked, looking confused as I met Cademan's eyes, and realized that he was talking to me. A weird sort of chill crept up my spine.
I told you before I left,
Cademan said, glancing at Claire.
She is Vargur. We all saw it.
What?
Luis Cesar said, looking back and forth between me and Cademan.
And as part Fae.
What?
She is to be welcomed by her family, as is tradition. One codified by treaty.
That last bit had a bite to it, probably because Luis Cesar's eyes had settled on Cayman with an expression I really didn't like.
What? Wait!
That was me. But Cademan didn't wait, although his smile acquired an edge.
And as there seems to be no way to tell which clan she belongs to, after so long, I have decided to adopt her into our little family. To the newest Blarestri warrior, he said, hoisting a mug of something.
Suddenly I was surrounded by Fae, dozens of them, laughing and talking and slapping me on the back, and shoving a beer stein into my hands while Luis Cesar stared at Cademan. And if looks could kill...
Dory, what the hell?
Claire and I had ducked back into the hall, while the festivities exploded outside. And while Luis Cesar and Cademan faced off, because it had just dawned on my boyfriend that the King of the Fae was trying to poach me.
You tell me. Did you know about this?
She looked shocked.
No. Or, rather, after last night, I knew what you were. Are, I mean what you have to be.
Claire, I'm not Fae.
But you're Vargur. That's a Fae talent. It doesn't exist anywhere else.
No, it doesn't. But vampire mental powers do.
You think that's what this is?
I know that's what it is. My mother was a Romanian peasant girl, and my father... I stopped, because holy shit... Mircea was going to be, well, pissed, didn't really cover it. Not only did he have a family obsession that this was going to fly straight in the face of, but he also needed me on the Senate right now, and needed badly, or he'd have never persuaded the consul to look at a damned Domphir every meeting.
Vampires can do that,
Claire said, her forehead wrinkling.
Just mentally ride along with someone? Because I've never heard...
Neither have I. Cademan had slipped through the door while we weren't looking, a massive pink bouquet in his hands. He laid it in my arms like I was some beauty pageant contestant about to be crowned, which would have been funny, except that Luis Cesar was on his heels. At least, he was until he grabbed the King of the Fae and slammed him against the wall.
You're not taking her!
I dropped everything, literally. The full stein splattered its contents everywhere and went rolling across the boards, and the flowers littered the hall. But I got in between the guys before a blow landed.
Not here. Damned right.
That was Claire.
What are you playing at, Cademan?
Playing?
A blonde eyebrow ascended.
I assure you, I am perfectly serious. The law clearly states that we are allowed to claim anyone with Fae blood.
I don't have Fae blood, I said.
I can assure you that you do.
And I can assure you I don't. I'll take a test if you like.
You already did.
Funny, I don't recall it.
Really? I thought it was memorable.
Stop making sense,
Luis Cesar snarled. And Claire nodded. I blinked, because seeing the two of them agree on something was kind of creepy.
It's quite simple,
Cademan said, taking his time and adjusting his wrinkled tunic.
We have a treaty with your Senate. With all of them,
for that matter. As you know, our birth rate is very low. We cannot afford to lose anyone of our blood, particularly one with such a rare gift.
We know all that, Claire broke in. But Dory just told you she isn't Fae.